Well, the number one thing, and it's always been that way, even before I was born, was that there's no education.
Oh, this is so true. You're not.
Well, we live in a country of debt, and the debt clock goes up 200 billion, something crazy every few minutes. It's a big number. So money is basically made up, and we can get, that's a whole nother discussion. But when people aren't educated and then their parents aren't good with their money, because 2/3 of all people don't budget, 3/4 of all people live paycheck to paycheck. And 3/4 of those people, when they hit age 65, when you can get Medicare, which is 80% paid, for example, kind of like that marker, but you can take Social Security at 62, they still can't retire.
Welcome to the Run, Thrive, Survive podcast with your host, Sierra Carter. Here we will untangle the madness of our health by understanding our mind in action. We will balance emotional, mental, and physical health every single day. Because some days we thrive. Some days we just survive. But together, here we will run our lives.
Hey guys, and welcome back to another awesome podcast. I'm Sierra. As always, we are here to run our lives and not let life run us. So really quick, because I did this in one of the podcasts and a lot of people love this. We are always here to have a great day. So I want you to take 2 seconds before we even start this podcast. And if it's safe, close your eyes, not if you're driving, but if you're driving, just stare ahead and focus on the road and just think to yourself, okay, whatever negative happened today, whatever negative happened yesterday, whatever negative circumstances are still going on, I want you to count down from 10 with me. And on that last number, number one, I want you to take a big inhale and just release it and push out all the negativity. Because right now we are hitting that reset button. We are pretending that this countdown is a reset button. We're erasing all negativity and we are going to go on from here on out on this beautiful day and we're going to make it a great one. So ready? I'm going to count down and you're going to just exhale as loud as you can. Don't be embarrassed by it. Ready? And 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and exhale. All negativity is gone. We are resetting the day because we are talking about personal finances. I think I had to do that one to like de-stress us before we really went into today's podcast. Now, today's podcast isn't stressful. It's actually really informational. The guest that's going to come on, David, he's a really awesome one. He had me laughing within the first 5 seconds of getting on the call before we recorded, calling me a young spring chicken who's got lots of time to make financial mistakes, but also create some really awesome financial habits. So that goes along with today's quote of the day. And I had a really awesome one on, but I think I already lost it. So let's see if I can find it. Hold on, you guys. Oh, here it is. If you're saving, you're succeeding. And in all honesty, we all struggle here and there, but a lot of us don't realize we are saving more than we actually think we are. And when you go back and see your savings, sometimes it's the most rewarding feeling. And if you're not saving, well, David's going to tell you why you should start saving today. So him and I are really going to go into the mental aspect of finances, because it could be mental, it can be emotional. It's not so much physical. This podcast really isn't about your physical well-being, but at the same time, I'm going to tell you, once you have your finances in check, you're going to be experiencing a lot less stress. So introducing David, he is the host of Something on My Mind podcast and the author of I'm Not Flipping Burgers When I'm 70. It's a personal finance book. I love that title. And he's also a financial coach who provides comprehensive planning for budgeting, debt management, home ownership, and tools to invest for the future. Millennials, people my age, Gen Z, we really dig in to a few of our really bad spending habits that we tend to do because of FOMO and trying to help or trying to keep up with our friends or everybody, the older generation used to say keeping up with the Joneses. Now it's just called FOMO in our generation, really trying to make sure we're not missing out on anything. We really dive into what that means now and what it could potentially mean for the future. And interesting enough, we get into the idea of weddings, which it seems like it's wedding season. If you're in between the ages of 22 to 25, it seems like everybody and their mom around you is getting married. And we're going to kind of dive into that, especially the emotional side of it. So I can't wait to bring on David. We've got a really awesome podcast, but before we get started, please make sure you are subscribed to this podcast. And if you'd like, please leave a review. I'm going to leave it there. We're going to bring on David.
Welcome to the Run, Thrive, Survive podcast with your host, Sierra Carter. Here we will untangle the madness of our health by understanding our mind in action. We will balance emotional, mental, and physical health every single day. Because some days we thrive. Some days we just survive. But together, here we will run our lives.
Welcome, David, to Run, Thrive, Survive. So I want to ask you the icebreaker question. What would you mandate for mental health?
You know, that's a great question. I don't know whether it's like government or even through like corporation if you work for somebody. Right. But I think we need it on both scales. And this is what I'm getting at, because some people are entrepreneurs, is I think the biggest thing with people is they don't have other people to talk to. Ooh. And right. It's they don't, it's now there's people who go to therapists and that's great. And first of all, a therapist will tell you at the end of the day, even if you can go to one, is you have to make things happen for yourself. They can't make the changes for you.
Absolutely.
And I've never been to one, but I'm just, you know, thinking that's pretty much what it comes down to in life. But with that being said, a lot of people are very lonely out there, and that alone can make you feel depressed. And lonely is not a good thing, but you could have you could be bipolar. You could be, a chronic condition. You could have all these things, but inherently people are good. And the problem is, again, because if they don't have somebody to talk to, it'd be nice to have a program where they could go somewhere where they don't have to worry about the cost burden, because that usually costs a lot. It's a big burden on people to pay for things. So if there was a way to have a program, just a free outreach, but it's solid. I mean, if you had like a couple pro bono sessions for all the people who are psychologists out there to go dip into a program to help other people to talk alone, that alone, just having a conversation on a fairly regular basis for people just to vent and feel good and hear some other opinions, and just to be someone gave them 30 minutes or an hour once in a while, that in itself would be just a great start.
No, I love that. And like, you know, just think about it. You never know what stranger is going to say exactly what you need to hear in that moment. Because sometimes a therapist by themselves, not going to, but a random stranger that's like, hey, I went through this. This is what I learned. Imagine how powerful that would be. I love it. Now, let's tie this into today's podcast, because you said something very, very interesting in there. And that was the cost is a burden on a lot of people. Now, you are in finance yourself, and you have a podcast called Something on My Mind, really based in personal, talking about people's personal finance. Can you kind of give us like a background of how that podcast came around and why you're so intertwined with like helping people with their finances?
Yeah. So that was in April of 2020. It was launched. And that was during COVID. And it was the joke that the kids always make is like, oh, another 50-year-old couple starting a podcast. Because most of them the majority of them aren't even active anymore. They're not active after 90 days and they don't make money. So don't think you're going to have a podcast to make money, because the odds are very low. So, but the reason we did it is that we could give back. And I wrote a finance book called I'm Not Flipping Burgers When I'm 70. My wife's a COO of a financial firm, owned a top firm, independent firm in the country. So and we can get into this. But when I met her, she was destitute. She didn't have anything. And that kind of the irony was she was abused and homeless and bankrupt, and yet she's in finance. So how can you help people with their money? And it's almost not that she did anything wrong with their job, but it's kind of like that doesn't make sense. But life has problems. So the point is, when we met, we knew instantaneously we were going to be right for each other, and we did things very fast. But we knew that in time, we always talked about doing something to give back. So as we went through the motions and we've been married 10 years, that we got to a point where now that our lives are in a certain structure and our kids are out of the house, that we could do more. And so what happens when you, you know, we're both in our 50s, when you reach that age timeline, at least for us, some of the you need more purpose in life. You have to have new things that are more purposes, if you will. And that was one of them. So we decided we would put this show together to simply help people. And we've been doing this all along anyway. So we see people nurture and grow from getting their first house to getting married to having their first child. Or there's people that we know that are friends of ours and they want to have questions all the time. Or like, we're getting ready to retire. You know, can you help me with these questions? Whatever. So it was like, it's already naturally was a fit. But it was great because we just did it again to give back. Wow. And didn't starting it is a treat it as a business. Don't start it as a business or maintain it that way in that regard. It was not about monetary thing. Was it one of our ways to give back?
Yeah, no, I absolutely love that. And you're right. If people, there's so many people that start a podcast and they're like, I'm going to become a billionaire. And I'm like, when you start a podcast, you're like, quickly, like, this isn't going to happen, right? Like, this is a lot of work. You do it to help people, or, you know, some people use it for funnels into their own business. So that's a little bit different. But I want to ask you, being in finance, what is like the biggest problem that you see? Like, just tapping into that really big pain point that you see a trend over, let's say, people in their 20s to 30s.
Well, the number one thing, and it's always been that way, even before I was born, was that there's no education.
Oh, this is so true. You're not.
Well, we live in a country of debt, and the debt clock goes up 200 billion. Something crazy every few minutes. It's a big number. So money is basically made up, and we can get, that's a whole nother discussion. But when people aren't educated and then their parents aren't good with their money, because 2/3 of all people don't budget, 3/4 of all people live paycheck to paycheck. And 3/4 of those people, when they hit age 65, when you can get Medicare, which is 80% paid, for example, kind of like that marker, but you can take Social Security at 62, they still can't retire. So that shows you something is fundamentally wrong. So when you're 20 and you get out, if you don't have education, you're going to follow in the same pattern that your parents taught you or your mentors. And the interesting thing is the internet's pretty much free for anybody. You can find it free if you couldn't even afford it. And you could go on there and find all kinds of information that won't cost you a dime. But if we want to take it from another standpoint, that's a little more realistic. Let's say you are ready to move out to your first apartment or wherever you're going to go. That means you should have already known before you go out there that I can afford to go live in this apartment or drive my car and pay for the insurance and the groceries and my streaming service and my utilities and my groceries and whatever it may be. And you start adding all these up. And I don't think people do, or they realize what it really is, or they don't come up with enough savings to start and practice these things. And so when they get out there, they are screwing themselves. And eventually, if they can't afford what they're doing because they didn't know that going in, that's where they lead into credit card debt, which is the worst debt on the planet, where people have their houses and they get home equity loans. And that's kind of like a giant credit card. It leads to these other things where you into a cycle of you can't afford for the things you're paying for. And then it's a very slippery slope. And then you're pushing a boulder up a hill, a big mountain to get back where you should be.
I know you had, like, kind of going along with this, you had an episode about instant gratification and our generation. And we were just talking about this, like, you know, like pre-podcast. What kind of problems are you seeing with instant gratification and debt? Like, especially credit card debt, because, you know, you said that one little thing, we can almost say money's almost made up. And like, it seems like my generation thinks, oh, credit card, oh, that's cool. It doesn't come out of my bank account right now. Okay, I'll pay this off later. Doesn't budget for it. And we just keep seeing it, you know, compound interest, you know, compounding works for you or against you type of deal. What do you see with the instant gratification problem?
It's kind of like if you were in, because there's not enough boundaries. So if you lived in like a Middle Eastern country and you cheated on your wife, they cut your yin yang off, right?
Right.
Eye for an eye, that kind of a thing. Or there's rules and places that actually exist like that. Well, you won't do it more than likely. Well, here you don't have that. There's no repercussion for that except for yourself. So, man, I tell you, I think the biggest problem is like in my generation, when I grew up, there wasn't all this social media. There wasn't FOMO. There was probably FOMO, but it wasn't even a term. There wasn't even a term of side hustle for that matter. It didn't exist. So now it's all there. And it's like, there's so many ways for all this information to be thrown in your face. And then you can throw in TV or streaming or all that stuff. And you start adding all of us up and it's in your face all the time. And so the biggest mistake that people make is the FOMO, which kind of ties into you're too worried about what everybody else is doing and you want to be a part of that, rather than staying grounded and saying, I just need to worry about what I'm doing. And if you can get past that and just say, I'm grounded for what I need to do, because it comes down to having goals and staying within your means and putting the little effort in, eventually you'll beat out those people. But they don't, and they don't realize every time I keep hitting Panera up or 7-Eleven, or you know, I go to the bar and I threw some beers down tonight, bro. Whatever, it's cool, but that stuff just starts trickling away, and that's just convenience stuff. Life is expensive to live, and if you don't know how much you're spending based on what you have to pay for things, then you're going to eventually have no money, or you're going to be in the hole. But it is, to me, without education and the FOMO, and you want to have fun and do things, and I get it, but are you willing to sacrifice and not do as much in order to be able to maintain, you know, to live within your means?
You know, I agree with you on every single point you make, but I do want to kind of like combat, and I'm not combating to argue, but at the same time, money is very emotional too, right? Like with FOMO. FOMO is almost an emotion, like, oh my God, I'm missing out. What the heck? Look, I have to go. Like, it doesn't matter if this beer is $10. I'm going to buy it because my friends bought a $10 beer, and maybe they have jobs that are like making three times as much money as you. How often do you see that most of these expenses, or maybe debt itself, is tied to emotions? And like, what kind of burden does that put on people emotionally, not just financially, that you watch tumble kind of in that snowball form?
It gets back to having all the accessibility to pretty much buy what you want within reason, expensive things. Houses, you get a house, for example, that's 4 to 5 times your gross income, which to me is very wrong. And then when they base that information on getting a house, for example, they don't know what your budget is. They only base it on your debt to income ratio. It's based on the bills that they know about, like cars or existing house or a student loan. They don't know all the other things, like I mentioned, like groceries and electric bill, utilities and streaming, all this stuff I already said. So that doesn't even factor into it. But let's just say the Super Bowl's coming up in February is a great example. Well, that's the best time to buy a TV. It typically is. And you go into the store and there's the guy and you start looking at all these cool things on the wall and you walk out of there buying something that you probably didn't need, but yet maybe your TV broke, you want to get a new one. That's cool. But you walked out of there maybe spending double than what you thought, or you walked in there not even knowing what I could afford to spend. You just go buy it because it looks cool. And it's kind of like these things are in a way a very pseudo-like slot machine. Because you keep pulling the handle and you're waiting for the prize and you hear the noise and you see the coolness, see the buzz, see the lights, and you're just, you know, think, I, you know what? This is cool. I got to get it. And if somebody else is doing it that you know of in your peer group, or you read somewhere that you give a crap about that's doing something like that, that's where the FOMO kicks in even more. And you want to jump in and be a part of that because you want to talk about stuff.
So how do you advise against it then? Like, what would you tell somebody if all they're doing is emotional spending, if that's all they're doing, how would you advise against it? Maybe financially, budgeting, like what would you say?
Well, first of all, if you have a budget, you got to stick to it, but let's maybe make something simplistic here. That's a flannel shirt you're wearing. Did you buy that from a department store?
Amazon.
Okay. Now, I don't know the difference. If you went and bought that at the Salvation Army secondhand or some shop, I wouldn't know the difference. And you would have paid $4 for it, right?
Yeah.
That's an example of there are always solutions to get the things you need if you can't afford to have them. So if you look at your budget and you say it's cool and you're like, well, listen, maybe my clothing budget is too high. I could walk. I have an odd size. I'm not a tall guy, but I'm pretty muscular. I've had to go to secondhand shops to find clothes. And I walk out of a bag of the most coolest, nicest things, sometimes never even worn, and I paid dirt for them. And I don't do that all the time, but I've done it, and no one knows the difference. And I have nicer clothes than they do. And so that's just one example, but it's true. If you can go down to the simple, and here's what we do in our show. Every week I do a personal finance tip of the week. It's about 2 minutes, and I give a little thing about if you do this or that, you can save yourself some money and don't even sacrifice the quality of your life. You could get down to the simplicity of going, I'm going to go to the grocery store. I'm going to buy I'm going to make chicken noodle soup, and I'm going to buy a celery. I buy the stalks and cut it myself. I don't buy the prepackaged stuff because you'll pay triple for it. Those are like things. There's a mentality things about when you're going to make the purchase, you got to think about how and which way you're going to purchase it. There's a myriad of things you can just cut down your costs if you just even choose in the way that you buy it alone. That in itself.
You have to go back to that college mindset, right? Like where we ate ramen every night of the week. People make fun of us, but we're like, well, it's 90 cents. So what are you going to do? But like when you get out of college, you think you have to live almost like an adult, quote unquote, and buy all this expensive stuff. Like, oh, I'm not in college anymore. I can't just eat ramen every night. So I can see that being a problem. Now, go ahead.
No, I just... Well, the interesting thing is if you were eating ramen and then you get out and you're a bad spender, that's the emotional thing you were kind of asking, where people probably say, I'm making a few dollars, I can move out, and I'm going to treat myself. Yeah. And then they forget the fact that they, what they had to do to eat ramen. And so that whole thing goes out the window, and then they, it actually, it's too bad. Just put it that way. If they could treat yourself when you can, but also understand where you came from to get where you are and balance those two things out. It's not like you have to give up your whole life, but man, when you're young and you're 24, you know, how much money do you think you're going to be able to make? It's not that much. Like, you have to build up and take time. So you can't go out and spend things. It's very logical when you think about it. You have to bite the bullet and say, maybe tonight I just can't go out. That's simple. Your friends could be going out. I can't go out. It sucks. I'll go buy a six pack or whatever it is you do. And you know what? You'll be fine the next day when you wake up.
You know, I agree with you, but like, you know, sometimes like I go out and just drink water, right? Now I have to ask you, when people are emotionally spending, but before they're not in debt yet. All right. Let's take Sally. Sally's the human. We'll talk about Sally this whole time. She's not in debt, but she's an emotional spender. At what point would you say she's in kind of like the red danger zone before she goes into debt? And how would she identify something like that? Like, what are like kind of like key indicators that your finance, like habits, your budget, something's kind of off before you have to start making that change?
I mean, you can certainly use apps if you want, like Mint or something like that. You can, I use Excel. I have my own grid. I'm old school, but it's they're still more flexible than anything using a grid like that. But, like when Cindy was in a spot, my wife and I met her in that bad spot, which is what I do with everybody I ever sit down with, as I say, let's whip out your bank statements. And in her case, I'm like, we're going to do a year. This is going to suck for a while. So get a couple bottles of wine. It's not going to be quick. It's amazing when you actually look line by line, you start finding a pattern yourself, and you want people to see it themselves, right? You don't want you telling them what they're doing wrong. You want to be able to be in the conversation so they can identify it as well. And for example, with her, she had an abusive husband. So she was like, basically the number one thing in her case was buying her kids love with just food because they were younger, and like getting the Subway, getting the Panera, getting the pizza, getting whatever. And it didn't seem like much, but when I said, keep circling every one of those things you do. And she could not believe how much the spending was just on that alone. So the best thing is you really almost need to print it out. Don't look at it digitally. Print out your stuff and go take if you don't want to do a year, do 3 to 6 months, probably more like six, and just go down the line and see where things are at. And you realize you're like, oh my gosh, I'm spending that much there. I spent $198 at TJ Maxx. How can anyone spend $200 at TJ Maxx? But it happens, right?
So when
you go to Macy's, go ahead.
When you're going through these bank statements, are you tallying up everything you spent at one place? Or are you just looking at expenses? Like, what are we looking for? Because I mean, I can look at my bank statements and be like, I don't see a problem here. Like, I enjoyed everything I bought, but like, there is a problem.
But like, you're saying that first of all, you only know if you have a red flag. Like you say, you're crossing the line to the bad zone. You have to know that mentally. That's like, or you don't even know, so you'll never even look. So right. You have to have some sense of, right? Maybe you look in your closet one day, and I got like a lot of clothes in here. So, right? Or maybe like some people overdrafted. Maybe they get the credit card bill and they're like, oh man, like, oh, well, wait, well, my minimum payment's only $36, but my balance is $5,000. At some point, you got to look at your stuff to realize it. Because in your point, if you're not budgeting, you're going to have to find it another way. If you're budgeting, you've already done all this work I'm talking about. So now you have to go backtrack and figure it out. So I know what you're saying. I'm 52. You're talking between someone 20 and 30. And so here's a great example. My three kids don't have this problem because we taught them, but they also learned but they also made a few mistakes along the way, and they realized what they are, but they also knew who their parents were. And so they became independent and better money managers. And so here's, I'll give you a great example. Haley went to Italy back in high school, and the other two kids had been working off and on between school because that was first and foremost for us. But they worked and they provided so they could pay some of their cell phone bill and certain things. We didn't just give them the farm. And then she wanted to go, but all the other kids' parents were paying for it. And we said, you got to contribute on that. And I'm like, and I gave her a date timeline. You better have a job by then. And she didn't. And then the night before I was about to cut her off and say, you can't go, she got a job. And then she worked her ass off 40 hours a week at Dunkin' Donuts for I don't know how long, at least the whole summer and beyond, and kept the job for a while. And when she went on the trip, she was the only kid who put any money into that trip. And that was the best lesson that ever happened. And they all loved it. And then we gave her more than she deserved, but she learned the lesson. And so even today she'll say, you know, I can't do this or that. And it's like, not that I can't. And it's just because she's managing her own money and she has her guardrails, and you got to screw up a couple times too, typically to learn, but the bottom line, Sierra, is you have to care. If you don't give a shit, don't give a crap, you'll never change.
No, I love that lesson. I love your parenting because that's what my parents did to me. So when I was super proud of myself when I was 15 from working from my 14, 15, all my jobs, all these like pet jobs, lifeguarding, snack bar. I had $10,000 saved at 15 years old. That's a lot of money for like a random 15 year old to have. Right. And my mom was always like, save it for that pair of jeans you're going to want someday. I'm not going to buy you. I never understood what she meant by that, cause I don't wear jeans. I wear leggings, you know, but that's besides the point. But like, again, I see what she's saying now. Now I want to ask you another question. Cause I've always wanted to discuss this, but so many people have seemed off about it, but you being in finance, I know you're going to have a lot of, I guess, advice towards this. So I'm going to give you a scenario. I'm 24. My friends, you're either desperately single, you're either engaged, or you're having a baby. A lot of my friends are getting engaged, and they are telling me, oh, we'll figure out finances later. As I've asked, like, you know, how are you going to afford things? Like, you guys are just buying a house on with PMI, like all that stuff behind you, like not great situation. What would you advise in this situation? Are people too late when they're just saying, we'll figure finances out? Or do you think they'll figure it out? What would you say?
The average house right now is $400,000.
Oof. Okay. You're not even Florida. Florida is like, houses around me are going for like $6,000 to $8,000 for 1,400 square feet. $800,000.
Yeah, I live in a very affluent area. Houses are expensive. But the average house has been rising because of the supply chain. But with that being said, that's what it is today. So if your friends are out there doing that right now, you should not be able to get a mortgage for anything less than 3.5% right now. So they're still going to have to put down $13,500 at this point, as an example.
That's then if there's you get closing PMI, right? If you get that, what?
Well,
what?
No. Well, PMI is on top of it. And that,
yeah.
So PMI, it's usually between like a quarter.
FHA loan. That's if you get the FHA.
FHA loan is 3.5%. And then as long as you have the loan, you can never get rid of PMI. If you have a conventional mortgage, you can get rid of PMI if you have 20% equity, 80% loan to value. But again, that's a monthly payment that never goes away. And that's between 0.25% to maybe up to 2%, depending on your credit and your loan value. So that's another cost. And then closing costs are 2 to 6% of the mortgage. So let's say in the high end is 6%. Let's just say that's 24 grand. So you add all these up just to get into the house. So that's just one thing. So, if you're waiting to go figure out finances before you get into the house, my first question would be to them, if I was you the next time you're drinking your water at the bar, maybe.
I'm already drunk at home. They get me to the bar. I'm drinking some water there. All right, keep going.
Oh, there you go. That's a smart way to do it. I do the opposite. I have one or so, and I actually have a breathalyzer in the car to make sure. I don't drink and drive, but I put one in there, and then I go home and have a few more because we got to dinner and I want to have a drink while I'm there. But if you're waiting that long, I mean, it's just not a good way to go. Like the question I would be again back is to say to them, how do you know that you can afford that house if you're going to figure out finances later? How do you know that?
This is true.
They'll say, I don't know.
So what?
And that's crazy to me.
What advice would you give to somebody if they're about to get married and buy a house? What do they have to sit down and look at? Like, what are the specifics that you should sit down and look at? Or, because everyone will be like, oh, well, neither one of us are in debt. I'm like, that's still not a good answer in my mind.
Kind of what I just said in that regard. You can go on the internet or go look up an article and something will tell you this. I want to buy my first house. What is it going to cost me? And they'll say closing costs are 2 to 6%. If you're under blah, 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 you'll be paying PMI. You have to understand what your taxes are every year. Taxes are variable wherever you go. So yeah. If it's $5,000 or $500 a month, for example, the taxes are $6,000 a year. That's a $500 on top of your payment every month. And then you got to pay homeowner's insurance. So that's usually an annual cost. But if you pay it monthly, what does that monthly cost? So you have the mortgage, PMI, taxes, and insurance. And then that's a lot of money for people they don't realize. Right off the bat, I got to pay all of this. And then when you like move out of your parents' house or maybe in an apartment and you go into the new crib, you're looking at probably another 40% on top of that mortgage payment with everything included. Just to maintain it, because things will eventually happen, which means you need to make sure that you have a rainy day fund. That's another thing. You got to have money aside. So when the tree falls on the gutter, you can pay for it. You get a water leak under the sink and the plumber comes in. How are you going to pay for it? Because most people don't have $400 to pay for an emergency repair. That's a, yeah. it's a well-known article out there, and it's probably worse now since the pandemic. And those are and then you need an emergency fund. Emergency funds are for when you can't work. So you need 3 to 6 months worth of your like survivor number. How much do I need to pay my bills in case somebody can't work? And if you don't have that, how are you going to pay bills if it happens? And it'll happen eventually. So I just named not only the house, the other two, the emergency and the rainy day fund, and that doesn't even count the budget. Like this is, and then it's just, and these people could be coming in with debt already. Yeah. Or if even if they like they don't have debt, like you said, it'll come fast. Like it'll take an escalator to get up there, but man, the bottom will drop out like an elevator.
Oh, big time. No, it happens. We see it happen all the time. I mean, even me being on my own, I've realized, whoa, wait a minute. You know, like I'm lucky enough where I pay off expenses for a condo that my family owns. So I'm not paying like for a mortgage or anything, but it's still expensive. Like it's not cheap. It's not a walk in the park, and everything does add up. Bills on bills on bills on bills, and something breaks. And food, like, oh my God. We forget we have to eat sometimes because you have to pay for food. Now, with relationships, what kind of burden do you see, I guess, the finances play in relationships as you get down the road after you buy this house that you didn't know you couldn't afford?
Well, the number one cause for relationship breakups is cheating. Actually, no, it's not. It would seem logical. 50% of all the marriages end up in divorce on the first go around, and it gets worse every subsequent marriage, but it's money. Wow. It's money. So when your friends or people, you know, your peer group are saying, hey, yeah, we'll figure it out later. It's cool. It's like, well, that's probably why it's interesting to think about that. Like you're at the age where you're going to start going to all these weddings or they throw in the destination wedding, which is a very expensive. If you're going to 5 or 6 weddings yourself, right? That's a whole nother thing that I think has changed. And then there's the afterglows and there's the all the pre-parties and all this stuff. We did a whole episode on weddings, and it's crazy what it costs. So I don't want a tangent, but the whole point, it's just, I don't know how you can get into something that's so impactful on your life and not have a plan for it and know you could actually do it. Like you wouldn't like, would you jump, go cliff diving in Mexico if they told you there's a 70% chance you could hit the rocks and die? You wouldn't do it.
I wouldn't, but I know some people that might take that chance. I would definitely not take that chance.
Well, listen, but look at you. You said I saved 10K by the time I was 15, right?
Yes.
Is that right?
So, yes.
But look at you now. Look at you now, because you actually, you have learned skills and you will never make that mistake. I'm going to bet, Ciara, that if you choose to get married or have a partner or whatever it is you want in life and you want to be with somebody, you're going to look at it very hard to make sure that they're fiscally responsible, because if not, you could love them to death and you could have the best fun. You could have the best sex. You could have the best travel. You could have the best families together. If they suck, that person sucks with the money, you probably won't be with that person long-term. That in itself, because you have that discipline in your background.
Absolutely. And it stands out too. When you're talking to people, when you're looking around, it stands out a lot.
Yeah. I mean, do you date?
Yeah, no, I have a boyfriend now. We're good. We're really good. But like I'm talking about okay. in the past, trust me, I've housed okay. people. I have given them places to stay and I've fed them as I was the girlfriend. Not fun.
Oh, you're like, all right. It's sounding like I need to get you out of here and clean off.
Yes, right? Absolutely. And I'm not the only one that's ever had to do that, right? So I can definitely see why it's such a strain on relationships. Now, one more thing I want to like touch on, getting towards the end of the podcast, student loan debt. What mm-hmm. do you forecast? So we hear so many different things. It's going to be forgiven. It's not going to be forgiven. I personally don't think it's going to be forgiven. I think people should be paying it off. I don't think we should be counting on the government to ever help us with student loans. But at the same time, some people are forecasting that there could be a student loan crash. What do you see with student loans? You probably work with these all the time.
Well, I don't, but I'll tell you, but I'll give you some info is that they will not be forgiven. If you're waiting on Congress to give you that, forget it. We did some analysis and basically with all the outstanding loans that are out there, that if they gave just the $10,000 that Biden wanted to do, it would be about $1 quadrillion.
Wait, he wanted to give $10,000 towards student loans.
That was in his campaign promise.
Oh, I didn't. Like only 10,000. I'm not,
yeah. And I'm not a political guy, but it was Chuck Schumer and Elizabeth Warren wanted to give 50. But $10,000 per all the outstanding loans out there per person. We did this math. It's about $1 quadrillion, which is over a trillion. It's 13 zeros. It's a one with 13 zeros after it.
That's a lot. That's a lot. Now,
or 12 zeros, 13 total. I should say it that way. Oh, but that's, it's, there's no way it'll ever be done. Our national debt is into the trillions. It goes up millions of dollars by the millisecond. There's no, and I know money's made up and they keep printing it. And that's why people have ran into trouble right now, even though there's moratorium right now and they keep extending it, not to make your payments with any interest or penalty. It's coming back. The country can't afford it. And then how do you decide at what point who gets what money? Is it, if I just paid my loan off now, for example, does that mean they give out this cool relief in 3 months? Am I subject to that because I don't have any more debt? Is that fair? I don't know. Yeah, well, or is it, when do you cut it off? When do you cut it off? Well, for students who are in their freshman year or students who are seniors, don't get it. It's new people coming in. Like all these things, all these guardrails, someone would get screwed anyway, and it would just be an outrage. And it's just, it's not, I just don't see it happening. I don't. You need to just kind of batten down the hatches and realize I have this debt. Make sure that you refinance. So if you're paying like either Parent PLUS loans from your family or student loans yourself or private student loans, whatever you have you need to refinance. And the interest rates are still low, but the Fed rate is going up. Inflation's very high. Those rates aren't going to stay small forever. And if you're stuck on a fixed rate or some variable rate, I'm not fixed, but variable through one of those institutions like Discover or Navient or whatever, wherever it comes from, yeah, it's somewhere 8-9% probably. So you might be able to get it down with a decent credit score to 4.5 or 5. And that's what you're going to have to do. And you're going to have to bake it into your budget. And this is precisely why, if like your friends at 24 probably have debt, that's another thing that's on the list that they haven't even figured out. And those are like mortgage payments to people. You could be looking at 20 years of payments or try to get to all those years of payments to get the relief in 20 years from now. But the amount of interest it just piles up, they're paying it. It's in a way, even though it's amortized, it's a giant, it's not a credit card, but it's like that. It's like another mortgage payment or another toxic debt that you have to manage. And it's like, it's not going away soon if you're paying it off every month at what they tell you to pay.
Now
you're screwed.
There's quite a few. Yeah. That's pretty much what you sign up for when you get a student loan, right? Especially when you get degrees that we are not sure where you're going to use them at, because there's quite a lot of those now. So let me ask you this, because I've heard before, I actually worked a little bit in finance for a little bit, and they gave tricks and tips and stuff that we were supposed to tell people. One of those was for simple interest loans, I think like a student loan, would be if you pay it off more often, it actually cuts down the interest and what you're going to pay in the long term. Would you say this is
absolutely
true?
Absolutely. Yep. So a student loan should be amortized, which means it's a fixed payment. If you get a fixed number, don't go with a variable, because eventually that's your choice. But eventually with the interest rates going up, it's probably 8 or 9% on a variable. You want a fixed rate based on the conditions today. But with that being said, it's no different. It's just like a mortgage payment that's fixed or a car payment, where that's just how amortization works, is that if my payment is $500, it will always be $500 until I pay the loan off. So with that being said, on those loans, you're paying a lot of interest at first. So if you looked at the first out of 20 years on a student loan, and you looked at the 240 months and you look at the first month of payment, you can look at a schedule on the internet and go put in the numbers. It'll say maybe $400 in interest and you're only paying 100 in principal or even less, whatever the formula comes out to be. And as you gradually pay those loans down, it is heavily weighted on principal and is a little interest at the end. So yes, because it's all based on what the principal balance is. The more you pay that off, then you're going to, in time, will reduce the amount of principal, which again reduces the amount of interest. But the thing to keep in mind here is that while you're paying this down with extra money, your payment's going to stay that $500 every month. Eventually, you'll just not pay $500 anymore. And you're like, well, my loan's done. And maybe I've paid it off 2, 3, 4, 7 years earlier, whatever you choose. That's what happens. So don't think, hey, I paid an extra $500. My payment's going down to $498 and then $496. It doesn't work like that.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And I think, again, going right back to what you would have mandated, education. Nobody knows this. It's just like your grandpa and grandma's way of paying off loans, just like once a month, which is what institutions want you to do so you can stay in debt to them longer and their interest keeps going up, right?
Can I say that, listen, man, if you have any of your friends or people listening that need this, you have to give a crap. Just spend some time, because you're going to better yourself later. Every day that you don't do this, you're actually losing money.
Yeah.
You're actually losing money. Or for example, if you have a 401k at one of your new jobs, well, if you don't, you could get free money with your 401k, and people miss the free money because they're going to match X amount of percent. You could be giving away money. But the whole point is, there's so many free resources out there. You can go to my podcast. Great. I don't care where you go personally. There's Dave Ramsey. There's Susie Orman. There's, go on the internet and just type in what you want to learn. And there's a myriad of articles out there that gives you all kinds of stuff. Awesome. And go read around to the place that's comfortable for you, the way you like it's given to you and the way you can read it and understand it. But all these resources are completely free. There's no reason you can't do it. I mean, you can go to my site and print out my budget right now. And if you go take out the Excel sheet, you could write off, I already given you the sheet. That's one example. There's millions of them. So you just have to put the time in. If you don't, then that's the choice you made, but it's there for you to do it.
Nope. And maybe we have to make them write a loan to go learn this stuff, right? Maybe they'll find more value in it. So wrapping up the end of the podcast, I want to ask you one question I ask everybody coming on, and it could be in finances. It could be literally anything. And that is, what is one habit or routine that you do every single day that helps you run your life so life doesn't run you?
That's an interesting thing. I make sure that I drink a big glass of water when I get up. That's the best thing to do for your body. Yeah. There you go. I make sure that I turn off all the lights that run outside. I open up the shades. You gotta have light. Make sure you have light.
Sunlight.
Right. Especially I live in Michigan. It's cold, it's snowy, and I have a house with a ton of windows. I know, so we travel a lot, but, so bringing light in. Finding things in my routine is to make sure that I have to do the things that are important to me and my health. So I don't want to skip on that. So if I have to drink a certain tea, I make sure I drink that tea every day. I make sure that I work from home. I make sure my house stays clean. So there's no dishes in the sink. We don't go to bed with dishes in the sink, for example. I want to come up with a tidy place to live in. So like there's all these like little habits that I do. And then, but I always think, maybe getting to what you're saying a little bit, is I always have some goals that I'm going to set for the day. And it's not maintenance goals like doing the dishes. It's goals where I'm going to do something a little bit out of the norm of something that I wanted to do. So like I'm writing a book. Cindy and I are writing a book. And I make sure I'm like, hey, just go write 200 words today. Make sure I go to bed writing those 200 words and I feel good. It's outside of, again, the norm of I have to do maintenance things that are important to me. Because when you do that, it spurs the next goal or the next little piece of that goal. And you feel mentally better that I'm knocking this little thing out that I wanted to get to. And that's how my mind works.
I absolutely love it. Well, thank you. Thank you for that. That's a great one. Just doing what like really makes your body feel good is sometimes the best thing you can do. Now, if people
you definitely know what makes you feel bad.
We all, and sometimes we tend doing that more. So if people want to listen to your podcast, where can they find you?
It's somethingonmymind.net. That's the website. It's on all social media platforms. Again, it's Something On My Mind, personal finance. Then as far as social media, I know you watch them on Instagram, but all the handle for all of those is somm.podcast. So we, you know, whoever listens, we're just here to help. We've helped a lot of people. We love it. And so if we get one person off this show, I think that's fantastic. And again, we do it with fun.
Yeah.
So it's not boring. It's relaxed. It's loose. It's like you're having that glass of water with you or the beer, like at the pub, just kind of having a conversation. So it's not just so prescriptive. So we've done pretty well. We hope that people keep listening, and we appreciate, you know, people like you having us on the show.
Absolutely. And I appreciate you coming on the show. And I also hope you stay warm up in Michigan. So, David, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you, Sierra. I appreciate it.
Thank you guys so much for listening to today's episode. Please make sure that you subscribe to wherever you listen to this podcast and head over to runthrivesurvive.com to sign up for On the Run's newsletter. And of course, if you do love the content and love this show and you want to support me a little bit more, you can also buy me a coffee and keep me energized on Buy Me a Coffee with the link in the show notes. Really, you just buy me a coffee and trust me, I thrive off of caffeine. So as always, you guys, I will see you here again next week on the podcast. But until then, make sure you go out there and run your life before life runs you. Bye, guys.